Welcome to the Eid al-Fitr edition. Thanks for staying with us. Now, we start with the flag bearer of the New Patriotic Party, Dr. Mahmoud Oubamyan, who has for the first time revealed his stance on the issues of LGBTQIA+ rights in Ghana. In his first public commentary on the raging issue, Dr. Oubamyan missed no words in completely shooting it down while addressing thousands of Muslims in Kumasi during the observation of Eid prayers. Ghana's parliament has passed a strong anti-LGBTQI+ bill, and the bill is now awaiting presidential assent. However, President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo has indicated his inability to sign the bill into law, as its constitutionality is being challenged in court by human rights activists. But in his address, Dr. Oubamyan said the practice of LGBTQI+ community is inconsistent with his religious beliefs.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take this opportunity to personally comment on the raging issue of LGBTQ in Ghana. First of all, it is important to note that our cultural and societal norms and values as Ghanaians frown on the practice of homosexuality. Furthermore, as a Muslim, my view on this matter aligns with the position of my religious faith. The Holy Quran is replete with verses frowning on LGBTQ acts, including same-sex marriages. My faith is, therefore, very strictly against the practice of homosexuality. No ifs or buts, no shades of grey. Therefore, I personally cannot support that which my religion, and indeed all major religions in Ghana, as well as our societal norms and values, clearly and unequivocally forbid. All the major religious traditions in Ghana, Christianity and Islam, are opposed to this practice. And I stand opposed to it now, and I will stand opposed to it as president, inshallah.
Interesting view there. Well, so now you hear the two political parties, the biggest in Ghana, their flag bearer have made their stance clear on the LGBTQI+ activities. And clearly, they don't want it. Well, we're going to delve into the dynamics today on The Pulse. Joining us now is spokesperson of the National Chief Imam, Sheikh Arimiyau Shaibu. Thank you so much for your time here on The Pulse. Now, we'll also be joined by Mustafa Bande, who is the Deputy General Secretary for the NDC shortly. And also, we'll have a spokesperson from Bamia's team joining us later on the show. But I'll start with the National Chief Imam spokesperson, Sheikh Arimiyau. First of all, thank you for joining us on The Pulse. Happy celebrations. I'd like to kindly unmute for me so that I could hear you clearly. Sheikh, I first of all wish you happy Eid celebrations. Should I come over later on for my own meal? I'm sure you're having a great day today. But this message comes at a time where the Muslim community has been expecting both the presidency and the vice to air their views about the LGBTQI+ bill. It comes as a good news, doesn't it?
Good afternoon, and my warm felicitations and best wishes to Muslims in Ghana, Muslims in Africa and across the world. And thank you so much also for the coverage and support you've been giving to us. The subject of LGBTQ has been a subject of important public discourse in Ghana. And we as Muslims and including non-Muslims also have expressed views, and different levels, different perspectives have been expressed. We actually, without doing the politics, have been expecting to hear, our own brother, Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia, as the flag bearer of MPP, to also express an opinion or state a position on the matter. So the fact that we have not heard from him for some time was a matter of trepidation for us, and we've been waiting with anxiety. I must say, as a Muslim, I am happy that finally he has stated his position on this matter in an unequivocal manner, so clear for everybody, does not need to analyze to state that this is it is repugnant to him as a person, to his culture and tradition, and more importantly, to his faith.
Yeah, so as a Muslim.
As a Muslim.
From the event center.
So I will commend him. I will commend him for having stated a position on the matter. Just like we have heard also from the former president also indicating that he is a Christian, but that this LGBT does not go with his Christian faith, and he will never support LGBT in Ghana. And I think that our two flag bearers have made their position clear. One is a Muslim, one is an...
Sheikh, I seem to have lost connection to you. You were just making a point there that indeed you're welcoming this idea that the two flag bearers of the biggest party
in
Ghana.
Muslim.
You're back now, gladly. Please continue. Sheikh, I lost you briefly. I know you're back now. Please kindly unmute for me so that I could hear you.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm happy he has made it.
Poor connection there to Sheikh Aramiel. He's been making the point that indeed the Muslim community is happy that the vice president has stated his stance on the LGBTQI plus activities in the country. But where does this leave us, really? Because the bill currently, though passed by parliament, has not been received by the presidency. So it leaves us at a very difficult position now. Let me bring in the Deputy General Secretary for the NDC later on. But I know Sheikh is back now. I'm hoping your connection is better. Now, the Christian community, Sheikh, has declared that they will be marching to the presidency to seek his audience, just to get his thoughts about this bill and why it has delayed in terms of assenting to the bill, because he hasn't even received it yet. And there's already a court case pending, which he cites as the reason why he has refused to receive the bill. What is the Muslim community going to do?
Community are on the same page. And there are matters that when it arises, we seek to collaborate. Anything that spells doom or a certain destruction to our society, the subject at the center of this LGBT issue and the bill that has been acceded to in the parliament, central to it is our concern about the survival of the family. It's the family that we seek to protect. And in this particular issue, both Muslims and Christians are one, and we are on the same page. So we will seek to collaborate with the Christian community, having analyzed the situation very well, and if we come to agreement, we could go hand in hand with the Christian community in order to seek audience with the president to understand why the delay, what are the technical issues, whether in spite of the fact that the issue is at court, still president could have, received the issue on his table and then accepted to it, and then let the court proceedings also go on. Because there are other cases where we know that the president, even though the matter was at court, he also still, appended his signature. So this is a matter that sits at the very heart of our society. It is about the family and its protection. So we need to bring the force of religion and morality gathering together all our energies in using the platform of interfaith to be able to really get the president to be persuaded beyond any doubt that it is his time to really sign and give an accent to the bill so that it will develop into a law. I want to indicate again, the president has nothing to lose if he signs this bill. Indeed, he will leave behind him a positive legacy for which he will be remembered by future generations, that we can rely on our politicians to protect our tradition, our belief, and our culture. And I think that the president should not allow this opportunity to slip by. And I support any interfaith collaboration to bring pressure to bear on the president to assent to the bill and develop it into a law. I think that one, I am ready to work together. As I speak confidently on behalf of the Chief Imam, because in the spirit and mindset and philosophy of the Chief Imam, I am strongly in my conviction that it's something that the Chief Imam would be prepared to support us to do.
Mm. Sheikh, I'll be coming back to you because there are other issues we'd have to discuss, but let me bring in a member of Dr. Baumia's campaign team. Her name is Ellen Amwadako, and she's joined us now live on Zoom. Thank you so much for your time here on The Pulse. Now, your flag bearer has stated his position when it comes to the LGBTQI+ bill. It comes as a welcoming idea for the people, isn't it? You'd have to unmute for me, Ellen, so that I could hear you clearly.
Hello.
Yes, loud and clear. Yes, I can. I can now.
Good afternoon to you. Good afternoon to our viewers. Good afternoon to my fellow panelists on this interview. Mm-hmm. My name is Ellen Amadeku. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'm a member of the Baumia campaign team. Our flag bearer has always said in the meetings and wherever you ask him questions about this LGBT matter, that his faith has been against it. His faith is against it. And as a Ghanaian and as a Ghanaian man and as a man who has a family, personally too, he was against it. So his speaking now about it, I believe, is just a confirmation of exactly what he has been saying all these years. Mm-hmm. Of course, today being the celebration of the Eid, and he had the opportunity to address members of his faith and the whole nation, he had to talk about it. And his statements, I do not have to repeat it, he has been very, very, very clear in his opinions towards this. So yes, our flag bearer has always been against this, and this is no news.
Ellen, the argument now is, why has he been silent about it for this long? Because he's currently the vice president. He could influence the president to ensure that he receives the bill and assent to it. Why just state your position now when this debate has been raging for months?
He is currently the vice president, as you said. He is not the president. Mm. Ghanaians gave a mandate to President Akufo-Addo. And that is in the tradition of the NPP, and it's in the tradition of every country with an executive presidency. It is the president who assents to bills, not the vice president. So the vice president can give his advice to the president, which I believe he has done. But it is up to the president, who we all voted for, or majority of Ghanaians voted for, to take the bull by the horns and assent to it. Dr. Baumia, as we speak, is vice president. And the last time I checked, vice presidents do not assent to bills. So yes, the vice president can give his opinion, which I believe he has done. But if you're asking us why he hasn't spoken all this time, it's because the president is in charge. We have a president. And the president has given us his opinions. He has told us why he hasn't received it yet, which we all know. But the vice president, who is serving under a president, we need to give his president the faith to fulfill his constitutional mandate, which is also a part of his constitutional mandate, is assenting to bill. It is not the vice president who assents to bill. It is the president. And we have a president of Ghana, and that is Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo. His term will finish on the 7th of January 2025. Until then, the president of Ghana is Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo. And the vice president, knowing his place, past vice president, would gladly give his boss the opportunity to do what he has to do. And that is why he has been quite silent on it for a time. But now, of course, as I said, today is a celebration of the Eid. He is with his people. He is with his members of his faith. He had the opportunity to address this issue, and he has addressed it.
It's one thing to state your position, and it's another thing to make a pledge. We have 8 months to the general elections, and the question is, should the president fail to assent to the bill before his time in office actually elapses? Will the vice president actually categorically state his view on this? Will he assent to the bill if he's president?
Why are we assuming that the president will not assent to the bill? The president, Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, has 9 months more on his term of office. I don't think we should jump ahead of him and assume that he will not assent to it. This bill, as we all know, has been in parliament for 3 years. 3 solid years. The parliamentarians have to take their time. They have to go through it. The original bill that even went over the time had been tweaked, more have been added, some have been taken out. So it takes time. It has been in parliament for 3 years. It just got out of parliament. The president still has 9 solid months before he's done, and we are already assuming that he will not sign. Mm. The president hasn't said anywhere that he will not sign. So
indeed.
Let him wait.
Indeed.
Let him finish. Let the court cases, let it be done. And then let it be submitted to him. And then we'll know whether he will sign it or not.
Indeed, the president hasn't stated his stance, Ellen.
Then we'll have to ask then whoever becomes the president, which I know will be Dr. Bawumia, then we can ask him those questions. Until then, the president of Ghana is Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo. He is not yet done with his term.
Yes, indeed. Since you're very optimistic that your flag bearer would be the next president, we just want a bit of definite answer for you. If you were president currently, that is if Bawumia was president currently, and if he should assume the office of the presidency, would he assent to the bill? That's the question,
Ellen. I'm sure he would. I mean, with what he has said today, I'm sure he would. And just as the Constitution gives the right to the president to assent to any bill and also go through it, I believe Dr. Muhammadu Bawumia, when he becomes president of Ghana, if by then the bill hasn't been assented to, he will sort out all the issues with it and assent to it.
And
statement this morning, you don't have to even have this conversation. He will definitely assent to it.
Thank you, Ellen. Don't leave us, though. Let me bring in the Deputy General Secretary for the NDC. Your flag bearer has also made his stance clear when it comes to the LGBTQI+ bill and also the activities of that community. Now, the second largest party in the country, which is the NPP, their flag bearer also made his stance clear. What's your initial reaction?
Commented on this LGBTQ matter because I've never spoken about it. Now, my point as an individual is that a government in power has a responsibility to fulfill in terms of its commitment and ensuring the enforcement of fundamental principles of the rule of law. And that is to ensure that within our democratic practice, as is dictated, that the president has a mandate for bills to pass through his outfit and under his hand to become a signature. I would have thought that to the extent that the vice president, sitting vice president, announces that he himself detests LGBTQ, does not believe in it, it should be the commitment of the government to the extent that
well, Mustafa Bande, we seem to have lost you. You're making your point on your
Hello?
Yes, I'm glad you're back now. Please continue with your point. I lost you briefly.
To the extent that the bill that was passed under the advocacy of religious groups and leaders, and the president passing behind with his government, to try and frustrate Parliament using individuals to go to court and put some applications there. For me, it makes Dr. Bamuz Baumia stands very inconsistent with the posturing of the government. Indeed, he is the current vice president, and anything that is done under this government, he must take responsibility. And so we are looking to see if after this holiday, the president will then man up to sign the bill. Because they are running away from the bill, trying to hide behind the frustration of the judiciary to frustrate parliament. And the people of Ghana are not happy with them. So the vice president who is standing election must inconsistently grant to the public to say that he is against it when they get back to the office and they support it. Was he not in the seat of government when we woke up one morning and the whole Jubilee House was littered with LGBTQ lights? Is he still not the vice president there? I keep saying that with that Dr. Mahmoud Baumia, if he disagrees with what President Akufo-Addo is doing now, he should man up and resign as vice president so that we can take him serious. Until then, he is a better half of President Akufo-Addo, and whatever President Akufo-Addo is held responsible for, President Mahmoud Baumia will take joint responsibility for that. And so I don't take his commitment serious when indeed government is doing everything possible to frustrate the bill. You remember that President Akufo-Addo went to the public to speak about a court case even before the case was filed. Is President Akufo-Addo a prophet to know that people are now going to file cases in court? It means that government is behind whatever is happening to frustrate parliament in the, using the judiciary. And so when you do that, and in the wake of the conversation, the vice president runs to whitewash himself and saying that he doesn't support it, when indeed his office is in a flagstaff house, when the lights there are littered with LGBTQ colors, and he remains vice president, he eats with the president, he wakes up with the president, they sit in the same office, please, they should spare us this.
He has made his point clear that he's simply the mate, he's not the driver. As a vice president, he can only offer advice to the presidency, which the member of his campaign team, Ellen, has already clarified that indeed he offered his advice to the presidency. But then at this point, the presidency is here to take action on his advice. That's not his fault, is it?
Is it fair that when it comes to digitalization, Dr. Mahmoud Baumia will be pontificating and saying that he drove the digitalization agenda under the president? When it comes to gay position and using the judiciary, the Chief Justice, to frustrate the bill, he is running away from it. How do you decouple these things? How do you take Vice President Mahmoud Baumia from the problems of President Akufo-Addo and then bless him with the benefits of President Akufo-Addo's regime? Please, I beg you, we should up the conversation of politics a bit. This is the first time a vice president is running to the public space to cry anytime something will affect his ambition. Then he goes to embrace anything that will enhance his ambition. This gross inconsistency in governance, I've never seen it before my whole life. How can we have a vice president doing this to his seat? How? If you so believe that you don't stand to stay with the LGBTQ commitment, why is the president and the entire government machinery trying to frustrate parliament from signing the bill? We will be happy to see tomorrow that Dr. Mahmoud Baumia have resigned as vice president because he does not agree with the posturing of the president when it comes to LGBTQ. He does not agree the fact that the Jubilee House is a whole boardroom for LGBTQ practices. That he does not agree that LGBTQ lighting took place at the Jubilee House, the seat of presidency. We are waiting for Dr. Mahmoud Baumia to resign. I know that if it was the same case under His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, this bill would have been signed long ago. Because we need a man who practices what he says, not a man who preaches and go into the room and doing otherwise. That is what our dear Vice President is doing. Let him resign. If you believe that President Akufo-Addo has failed, let him resign. If he doesn't stand with the commitment of President Akufo-Addo, let him resign. If he so believes that he's better than the current government, if he so believes that he's better than the president, let him resign so that we know and take him serious. But until then, I don't trust this Vice President, and I don't think that he's been consistent with himself and the issues prevailing at his own office at the Jubilee House.
Thank you, Mr. Fabande. Don't go. We'll come back to you. Let me bring in Sheikh Arimiyao now, who is also listening to the conversation. Now, the Christian community has declared their stance. They would be meeting with the presidency to see how best they could resolve this issue, because Parliament's passage of this bill is a clear indication of what the people want. And I know that the Muslim community is also opening the door to collaborating with the Christian community on this. Do you have timelines as to when this would happen? Sheikh, you would have to take your point again, but unmute for me.
Good. Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear.
Yeah. I think that I cannot say specifically what the timeline is, but still the subject remains very relevant in our public discourse, and it's something that as a religious group we are interested in. And like I indicated, on this subject matter, Muslims and Christians are on the same page, and we will seek the grounds to be able to collaborate and bring the pressure to bear on the president to accent to the bill into law. Because as it is now, it is the presidency against the whole of the population of Ghana. 275 parliamentarians have all agreed, have accented to the anti-gay, anti-LGBT bill. So then you ask yourself, why is the president not eager? And meanwhile, we remember what the president told us during his inaugural speech, that as citizens, we must be citizens, and that we must not be spectators. And I think that once it borders on the national conscience, and it's a national concern, and we are bothered about what LGBT does to a family, then I think that the president must respond as quickly as possible to this. My worry, as I have been told, is that if the president fails to sign and the current parliament exhausts its term, it means all the efforts that we have made have become fruitless and worthless. So the whole process will have to be started anew once again. And what is going to happen to that, I cannot foretell. And that is why I have some trepidation and my anxiety about what appears to me that we are hiding behind the technicalities of law in order not to really give accent to this bill and push it into law. And I want to reiterate my call on the president that he has nothing to lose if he signs the bill into law. Indeed, he will leave a legacy for a younger generation of politicians who are coming in the future. And indeed, generations of Ghanaians, yet unborn, will remember that, will be inspired that we can really, really have confidence in our politicians to protect our values, to protect our beliefs, to protect our traditions, time and the traditions. And I think that the president should not lose this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Sheikh Arimiyao there. He's a spokesperson for the National Chief Imam. Well, happy celebrations. I'm sure you'll be having a blast after the show. Let me bring in Ellen, who is a member of Bamia's campaign team now, to share her final words with us. Ellen Amodako, finally, before we let you go, your final words. You've heard the concerns from the NDC. They say that there are inconsistencies with the posture of your presidential candidate, which is Dr. Bawumia, and they want him to actually resign to show his stance. What's your thoughts about that? Uh, Aline, you have to unmute for me so that I can hear you clearly.
I find this quite interesting, coming from a party that has a flag bearer whose best friend, I believe, is one of the most celebrated gay rights person and a gay person. The supposed best friend showed up when their flag bearer was actually inaugurating his book or was putting his book out there, and the one Mr. Andrew Solomon, who is the best friend of their candidate. This call for the vice president to resign is coming from people who have such a person as their candidate. They also have a person who has been president before. He was vice president before. Under his tenure, issues of gay matters came up. They didn't even see it fit to even send anything to parliament. That person and people from his party actually have the audacity and the nerve to be at Dr. Balmier's tail and asking him to resign. He should resign because of what? He should resign because it is not his duty to accede to a bill when he is not president. Perhaps they should go back into their homes. They should go back into their party and look at their flag bearer once, twice, three times and check his stance on this gay matter. Check who his friends are. Check who his associates are. And perhaps they can look at that and solve their issues. Dr. Balmier has said it this afternoon, and he has been very clear about it. He does not in any way support gay rights. He is not part of it. He doesn't believe in it. His religion does not believe in it. I do agree with Sheikh when he says that the Christian community and the Muslim community are going to talk to the president to find out what exactly is going on in terms of the technical issues. They are at liberty to do so, and I believe that they can do so to push the agenda of getting this bill accented to. As I said the last time, let us not forget that this bill was in parliament for 3 years. 3 solid years. It barely got out of parliament 2 months ago. So let's give the president the space and the energy he needs to sign. President Akufo-Addo has 9 months more before he leaves. As for Dr. Balmier, he has made his stance clear. And I believe we should stand at that. As for the NDC, their Deputy General Secretary and their flag bearer, I think we should all put them at the back burner. We know who they are. We know who their friends are. And they cannot change the minds of Ghanaians. Dr. Balmier would finish his term as vice president. He's not going to resign.
Thank you, Ellen. And let me bring the Deputy General Secretary for the NDC now, Mustapha Gbande. You've heard the campaign team of the NPP flag bearer, Dr. Balmier. They are clear that he's not going to resign. Your final words before we let you go. Madam, you have to unmute for me. I'm asking you your final reactions before we let you go. The member of Dr. Balmier's campaign team, they are clear. They said that he would not resign. They also welcome the thoughts of Sheikh Arimiel that indeed the Muslim and Christian community should come together and see how best they could dialogue with the president on the way forward when it comes to the ascension of this bill, the LGBTQI plus bill. So, Mr. Bande, what's your thoughts about that before we let you go? Well, unfortunately, we can't hear you, Bande. Well, probably technicalities, but then I'm sure we'll get his response in subsequent bulletin. Well, that's the pause. We've been discussing the anti-LGBTQI plus bill, and the Vice President has made his stance clear for the first time during each celebrations, Kumasi, about the bill. He says he does not support the activities of the gay community. And by this declaration, public declaration, it means the two top political parties, which is the NDC and the NPP, they've declared their stance on the bill. Now, where does that leave us? Well, we know after conversing with Sheikh Arimiel that the Muslim community is planning to collaborate with the Christian community to see how best they could dialogue with the presidency. Well, let's do some other stories. Administrative officer to the Upper West Regional Chief Imam Alhaji Yahya Dia is asking the Electoral Commission and other stakeholders to ensure a peaceful electoral process as Ghana gets ready for a major election year later this year. He says all eyes are on the country and the onus lies on the election managers to be nonpartisan and fair in the discharge of their duties. Rafiq Salam reports from Wa.
Followers of the Orthodox Muslim faith and the Ahl Sunnah wa Jamaat in the Wa municipality ended the 29-30-day Ramadan fasting on Tuesday following the sighting of the moon in some few communities in the country, including Bulenge in the Wa East district. Tens of thousands of Orthodox Muslims in the Wa municipality thronged in droves to the various venues where the two rakat open congregational prayer is to be performed. The Nasiri Bomi II Park had the largest gathering. Both the young and old, majority of whom gorgeously dressed in white apparel, were there in their numbers. The overlord of the Wala traditional area, Nafusini Sidi Pilipo IV, accompanied by a litany of sub and divisional chiefs, were present, adding color, culture, tradition, and splendor to the occasion. Jami Imam Alhaji Yahya Ponjang led arguably the largest Muslim sect in the region for the prayers.
Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
This year's Eid al-Fitr is held on the theme Peace Before, During and After the 2024 General Election. Administrative Officer to the Upper West Regional Chief Imam Alhaji Yahya Dauda urged members of the Muslim Ummah to see the election beyond partisan politics and also refrain from acts that will bring violence in the country.
Perceiving the crucial nature of the upcoming general elections, it is a must-win contest, especially for the two major parties. We Muslim Ummah now reiterate and call, we give a clear call to every Muslim, because this is a collective responsibility of every Muslim Ummah. We should therefore see the election and place it above partisan politics. It is but a period of transition. Whoever Allah chooses for us will cooperate and forge ahead courageously.
Alhaji Yahya Dauda also used the opportunity to call on the Electoral Commission, secret agencies, and the media to discharge their duties in a nonpartisan, fair, and unbiased way so as to prevent dispute that may plunge the country into chaos.
All eyes are looking up to some people. One, Electoral Commission EC. Two, the media. Three, the security agencies. We therefore pray that this will to execute their electioneering mandate objectively. They should be very, very prudent, so that at the end of it all, the outcome of the 2024 general election will be universally accepted and there will be peace in Ghana and will continue to enjoy the peace.
The Upper West Regional Chief Imam's administrative officer, however, was not oblivious of the punishing high temperatures that they were subjected to during the one-month fasting period in the region. According to the Meteorological Agency, temperatures in the region rose as high to 45 degrees Celsius.
We see the appearance of the heat of the sun as a blessing, because we will ask to believe that nothing good comes easy. It's because Almighty Allah wants to accept the Ramadan, that he wants us to trial and suffer for it. At the end of it all, Almighty Allah will shower us with abundant blessing. So Alhamdulillah, we now only pray that Almighty Allah to water it down a little so that we can continue worshiping. So it is a blessing.
Members of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaat also observed the yearly Eid prayers at the West Senior High Technical School football field. Reporting for Joy News, Rafiq Salam. Wa.
Let's do some other stories now. As climate change continues to bedevil Ghana and the rest of the world, global leaders have mooted the idea of the general population to initiate activities that will address the problem. Here at Journeys, we've been doing our part with our field exhibition project. We have a report on that for you shortly. But let me welcome you to the studio, Jacob Johnson Atakpa. He is Zero Waste Cities Projects Manager, Green Africa Youth Organization. And he'll be sharing with us how they are tackling climate change through their campaigns as well. Right now, though, let me bring you our field exhibition. Hana Odami takes you to Madina here in Apa. One, two, three, four, and five. That's the number of heaps of rubbish on display in between the highways on the Madina-Zongo stretch at the La Nkwantanan district in the national capital. Pedestrians call this an eyesore, especially for a city which yearns to be the cleanest in Africa.
It's very appalling. They have to charge those who are around to. Yeah, you are sitting here saying, and you, after that you go and put garbage here. It's not nice. Those should change their attitude.
Those who make, gather, and dump the rubbish in between the roads say it is the assembly which has not been responsible in collecting the rubbish.
The waste collectors don't come to pick the rubbish, and so this place is always filthy and smelling. The entire stretch is filled with rubbish. Why? This leads to cholera and malaria. Government should pay the collectors so they can do their work. I dare ask, is this the country we say will be the cleanest in Africa soon?
Ghana say, "Sen omusi, ombe ye Ghana ye, ama Ghana ye krabeshe, Ghana ye sa abroche, abroche na anio, abroche na ni negu on, abroche Ghana abroche negu on."
Also contesting are some of the traders who sell along the highway and are being blamed for generating such filth and not dumping them in designated bins.
Why else? When
we close from work, we collect all the rubbish we make. We always sweep our working areas, especially when we close. And the waste collectors come for the rubbish every morning, but today they are late.
Fed up with a constant spectacle of rubbish littered all over the stretch, this regular user of the road proposes a solution.
You see, the rubbish is not from the Togo people, it's not from Burkina Faso, it's not from Cote d'Ivoire, it's from the Ghanaians. The ordinary man who is walking on the street, you see, you come and pick it today, tomorrow when you come and meet it again. So now what are you going to do? So this one, no, me, I don't put blame on the Zoom Lion, because the Zoom Lion, now no place they're supposed to put the dustbins. So they will tell the people, you put it on the middle of the road, so after another day they will come and pick it. So we will talk. Government will come. We are in the same problem.
Frustrated about the regular sight of rubbish, this road user also struggles to recommend to joiners a lasting solution he believes would help keep the city clean.
I don't know. We too, we are the cause, you see. So at least the assembly should at least give us a lot of these bins, rubbish bins, so that if anything, we can dump inside, instead of putting it on the ground.
From Medina, here in Accra, I am Hannah Wadami for joining us.
Well, thankfully, I have Jacob Johnson here with me in the studio. He is the Zero Waste Cities Project Manager, Green Africa Youth Organization. Thanks for your time here on The Pulse. Now, let's get straight into it. How does waste collection and management actually influence our climate?
All right. Thank you very much, and a very good afternoon to your audience. Mm-hmm. I think the first thing that we should also recognize is that waste as a problem is very pervasive in Accra. It's not just Accra. The entirety of Ghana, waste is a very big problem. And when you look at the signs of it, when you mismanage your waste, especially organics, or you mix up all your waste and you take it to a landfill, which is the status quo, what happens is that because of putrefaction, methane gas is produced. And methane is one of the greenhouse gases or the short-lived climate pollutant that we have. They have the ability of trapping heat and then increasing the atmosphere's temperature. And that is what you, over a short period of time, over 30 years, three decades, you then call climate change. And so it's not a one-time thing. It's a compound effect that sort of cascades and then becomes climate change. And then we start to feel the effects of very high temperatures in Accra.
Which we are already.
Exactly. And, you know, for the past months, a lot of people have been complaining about that. Then you have very, very heavy downpours. Mm. You have flooding in Accra, which is also a problem of another aspect of improper management of waste, which is the illegal dumping of waste and other drainages and other places. And so it's a very complex problem. But the thing is that once you mismanage your waste, it creates a problem that doesn't end. Because then, even if it doesn't produce methane at a landfill somewhere, it finds itself into a drainage, which can then choke your gutter, which can lead to flooding in cities like Accra. And so it's a very complex problem. But the thing is that there's a solution to it. And at Green Africa Youth Organization, the project that I'm on, which is a zero waste project, tackles waste from a holistic perspective. The thing is that when you're able to divert waste from landfills, you do a lot to it. Because zero waste essentially is a concept that says that do not produce waste that cannot be used for something else. So if you are doing an activity, you're pursuing an agenda, and you're going to create waste, and the end product of that waste has to be found at a landfill, has to be found in a drainage, has to be burnt, then do not produce that waste. That is a very simple concept. And so when you create organic waste, which a lot of people create, from households to organizations to eateries, restaurants, and a lot of hospitality establishments, there's a lot of organic waste that is created. The solution is then to compost your organic waste, to turn it into compost, and then that can then be used to green your city, green your house, green your organization's workspace, have flowers, or even plant a garden in your home. And so that is how you properly manage organic waste. But in Accra, because of high cost of waste collection from formalized waste collection agencies or even sometimes the informal sector, and because of the convenience of just dumping your refuse in the drainage or just putting it outside so that when it rains, the rains will just throw them away or move them away for you. Mm-hmm. And just the convenience of just not caring about what happens to your waste. Mm-hmm. All these problems have compounded into what we see today. And so you have the open burning of waste, which also releases certain toxic fumes. And people always complain that when you burn waste or when you burn anything, that the fumes are toxic, they harm them. You may not see the effect now, but 10, 20 years from now, you go for a checkup and they tell you, oh, you have a respiratory problem. And you not even think that it's because you were burning waste some 5 years back, for a period of 5 years. That's why you have that. And so the zero waste model is one that's been working. And the genesis of it is that Gaia was an organization started the Sustainable Communities Project in Edubiase, that's Adansi South. Okay. And based off of the feasibility studies that we did, we're able to set up a material recovery facility. The purpose of that facility is that it receives waste from the community, it receives waste from the market, and tries to recycle that waste. So you collect your organic waste and turn it into compost, you collect your plastic waste, wash, sort, pelletize, and then you can recycle into other plastic products or even pet-to-pet recycling, essentially. And then you collect your e-waste, which you prevent people from burning, like is or like what's done at Agbogbloshie, which was touted as one of the most toxic sites in the world a couple years back. But thankfully, that is not the story. That's not a story today. And so you prevent burning of waste, bring them to a material recovery facility, process them, and ensure that it becomes another product. And that is what people refer to as the circular economy. That is to say that you don't extract resource, use, and dispose. What you do is you extract a resource, you use, reuse, recycle, and then it goes through the loop so that you don't just do irresponsible consumption or production.
That's interesting because you're trying to tackle the issue from the generational point, which is from the manufacturers down to us, the consumers. Yeah. Now, growing up, we're taught about waste segregation, but we're not taught about decomposing your waste and organic waste. How do you plan to sensitize the people to actually work with your agenda?
So the project site in Accra is based in two municipalities, that's the Ladadeko-Tupon Municipal Assembly as well as the Lejokoku Municipality. So these two municipalities have been the bedrock of the Zero Waste Project here in Accra. Mm. Segregation, like you mentioned, is very important because if you do not segregate your waste, you pollute the waste, so to speak, because then you mix up all streams of waste, textile waste, plastic waste, organic waste, everything. And if you do that, you cannot properly generate compost from the waste because then you have plastics mixing with that. Eventually, they'll break down but not decompose and form microplastics, which will then pollute your organic waste. So essentially, the model is such that once you're able to segregate your waste at a household level, what we do is that we train households who are interested in setting up urban gardens. And so if you have a space in your house that you feel you can use for a garden, we have an urban farming officer at the organization that goes around most house to house, teach people how to set up urban gardens. But then you realize that the problem is way beyond just setting up the urban garden, how to take care of it, how to manage your space, which is also important. So there are people who've done a lot of engineering in their homes, and so there's no ground, or let me say soil, that is even seeable in the house. And so then we come up with the innovation of wall gardens, where you're able to repurpose some of your broken buckets, dispenser bottles, etc., and then you can have a wall garden when you string them up together and just hang on your wall, and you still have a garden. So it's not necessarily about having a space to cultivate something, it's just about being willing to do something. And once you're willing, the people always say that once there's a will, you find a way. And so that's just it.
So you're working in Accra. Is this project also in other parts of the country? And what's the response so far?
So it's not just Ghana even. So there is SCP Edubiase, which is currently producing 2,000 bags of compost, organic, pure organic compost, on a monthly basis. There is SCP in Ibuakwa, that's in Ashanti region of Ghana. There's SCP Cape Coast as well. Then there's SCP Accra, or Zero Waste Accra. But beyond Accra, we're also in Mali, Kenya, Uganda, and even very recently Botswana. And the idea, or when the SCP project was starting out, it was a pilot that looked to be able to replicate itself across. And the point of the zero waste model is that it has to be self-sustaining. Because if it's not self-sustaining, you have to keep putting in resources that you may not even necessarily have. And so the reception point, I can say, for Ghana is very good. Because people find that, as opposed to paying a lot more money to have your waste collected and sent to a landfill, you can then use your waste on your own. And you can then even sell your waste to other people and generate money. And so for organic waste, we always say you try as much as possible to compost in your home, or you can take it to the MRF, that's the material recovery facility, and have it composted. But for plastic waste, we essentially connect other businesses, small and medium scale enterprises that are along the plastic value chain, that are into recycling, to be able to collect plastic bottles, that's the PETs, PP, all the different types of plastic, and be able to recycle it. And that is how we're fighting it. But then that is just from the end user point. From the production problem, we always say that before plastic waste or waste generally becomes a problem, it must be from the source. And so we find that currently the levels of plastic production are very unsustainable, and that's why we have a problem. So even if you decide to invest a lot more into plastic waste management or general waste management, once you do not address the problem from the root source, then it becomes a problem. And so there is the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee to develop a legally binding instrument on plastic pollution that the INC, as people like to call it, has been set up by the United Nations Environment Assembly. What the resolution 514 did was to mandate an INC process that can find a global solution to the problem. So not just a legal perspective for individual countries like exist in status quo, but then one that is legally binding for all countries. And that is what we are looking at. And one of the things that we are seeing during this process is that we have to cut down plastic production, because it is from the production of unsustainable levels that's where we are getting the waste problem. So if we're able to cut down production, maybe then our waste management architecture can be able to deal with it. And there are lots of things. Talk of restricting the movement or the transboundary movement of plastic waste. You know, because of waste recycling, a lot of the global north countries don't necessarily have recycling plants in their country. So they usually, what they usually do is to export plastic waste to developing countries or the global south countries. And that is a form of waste colonialism, by the way. And then you have them expose this waste. Some of the waste comes here contaminated. And so you cannot even recycle because it's mixed with other waste. And then
like secondhand clothing.
Exactly.
The bills, the leftovers. Exactly. And it ends up on our landfill sites and sometimes polluting our ocean and water bodies.
Precisely. And so when this waste comes here and you're unable to recycle, you can't send the waste back because it's already here. Then it becomes a problem for us. And so one of the things that this, again, is looking to do is to try to find an international perspective of how to stop the movement of this waste. I mean, if you have waste you want to recycle, you might as well do it in your own backyard. There's no point in transporting it or exporting it to the global south where we are facing the problems of pollution.
Here in Ghana, have you done any project with the EPA or public government to see if you could put together a petition to actually stop this issue from the generational point, which is at the manufacturing stage? Because we have a lot of plastic producing companies operating here in Ghana. Have you done that?
So yes, there is the current, it's a multi-stakeholder approach that the ministry and both the ministry and the agency are using. There is the National Plastic Action Partnership that operates under the Ministry of Environment, Science, Technology and Innovation. And they're bringing together a lot of stakeholders, civil society organizations like us. They're bringing together plastic manufacturers, plastic importers, recycling agencies, informal sector waste workers, essentially everybody along the plastic value chain to try to find a solution to this. Because then the ministry alone cannot find the solution because they possibly do not know the solution from the perspective of manufacturers or civil society. We cannot find a solution alone because then the manufacturers have a different viewpoint. And so it's a multi-stakeholder approach that is trying to find a solution to the problem that we have. And currently, I mean, because of our involvement in the INC process, we work very closely with both EPA and MESTI on the INC process to try and get as it were, perspectives of all stakeholders. And so currently, we've even submitted to the Ministry and EPA a very hefty document that takes perspectives of the stakeholders along the value chain and gives it to the ministry on the negotiation points that they should look at when they go for INC. And I think INC is in about 2 weeks from now. And so about a month ago, we hosted that event and saw a lot of people along the value chain. And even before the event, many people did not even know there was something like that going on internationally. And so people got interested, came, gave us their perspectives, what they think the problem was. And I should say it's amazing to know that a lot of people are crying out for a ban on single-use plastic. That is the... And I like to call them the avoidable plastics because really we can live without them. And those
we
are the
can?
Single, we can. Because I mean, if you go into waste stream, right, there's a lot of PET that's collected, that's the water bottle, PP, food packaging and all that. Those are recyclable. But if you look at stuff like styrofoam, takeaway packs, those are not recyclable. You can't do anything with them. So they're either going to landfill or you're going to burn them. But then these are plastics that you can avoid. These are plastics that have non-plastic substitutes that you can use. There's a lot of paper packaging going around. And I'm even not an advocate of paper packaging because paper packaging is even single use. But then there's a lot of reusable bowls around that people have. There's a lot of tote bags made from cloth that people can carry around and use that instead of taking the black plastic bags and all those ones that have no recyclable value. And so there's a lot of these things that have non-plastic substitute that people can use. But then, I mean, so one of the...
So it starts with us.
Yes, it's basically, that's it.
So when next I'm going to buy Washi, I should go with my own bowl.
Go with your own bowl.
Okay,
it's
I'll
really
try.
It's very difficult. Go with your
it's
own
bowl. It's very difficult,
and
but
maybe
I'll
let
try.
Let me put this challenge to you that maybe here at the office, here at the studio, have a plastic tax.
Okay.
When you see somebody using single-use plastic, avoidable plastic, not avoidable and problematic, because then even though you can avoid it, it still brings you problem. Tax the person. Have a rule here at the studio that if you see someone using single-use plastic, pay 5 cedis, pay 10 cedis, and see in a month's time how many people stop using it.
I see. Let's see if that will work.
It will work.
But then we're looking at the market centers again, because that's where a lot of waste is generated. I know that some of the projects you're implementing initiatives are mostly for household waste and individuals. Is there anything targeted at the markets?
Yes. So when you go to the La Market and then the Malamata Market, there are a lot of traders there who trade in perishables like food stuff and all that. And those stuff are essentially the base of your organic compost, because they are pure organics. They are pure organics, and those can be easily recyclable. We do not wish for the food products to go to waste. But as and when they do, there are informal sector waste workers, like people who ride the tricycle. We like to call them Aboboya or BTTA. They have an association, the Bola Taxi and Tricycle Association. They move from market to market and collect solely organic waste. And the good thing is that these people know the importance of the work they do. So they're able to even educate the market people that you need to segregate your waste. Because they know that if I come and pick segregated waste from your store or your shop, I will be able to make money out of it. And so it is now their responsibility, essentially, because we cannot do all the education and capacity building alone. So they also are agents of change, and they do that. And so in some markets across Accra, you see some traders steadily segregating their waste. When they drink water from sachets, they put them in a different bag. When they have foodstuff that are going back, they put them in a different bag. And these are the things that help recycling, because if you do not segregate the waste at source, you cannot recycle. If the waste is contaminated, then the only option is either to send it to a landfill, which is going to generate methane, or burn it, which is also still going to pollute the air. And so around January, February, you can see that the air quality is very, very poor. And if you follow EPA on any of the socials, they usually have an air tracker that they use to track the quality of the air that we are breathing. And between January and February, and even the early parts of March, if you see the alarming rate of the air pollution in Accra, you'll be troubled. And so they usually advise that people go out with their nose mask and all that. And so it's a very comprehensive approach, and it doesn't take just the CSO or local government or waste workers or even central government to do. It has to be everybody, because if I don't segregate my waste at source, the Bola Taxi person will come pick the waste, and it's a problem for him. He has to send it to a landfill because he cannot take it to a recycler. He has to send it to a landfill, and that's where the problem is. And so this is a very, very, very complex thing. But I mean, it's complex but not impossible. We can do it. Once everybody puts their mind to it, we can do it.
Thank you so much, Johnson, for joining us here on The Pulse. Key takeaways: segregate your waste, and that's the way to go. Well, we're taking a quick breather here on The Pulse. When we come back, we'll talk about the adjustment of transport fares. Government is kicking against it, but road users and especially the passengers are already feeling the brunt, because the drivers have already increased fares. We'll talk about all that when we return from this break. Thanks for staying with us. You're watching The Pulse with me, Faustina Safom. Now, it has been back and forth between drivers, mates, and passengers. Well, the big question now is, what's the way forward? Because regarding the unauthorized transport fare increment as of April 8, 2024, the price of gasoline in Ghana stood at 14 cedis, 15 pesos per litre. Now, drivers say they are left with no choice but to increase the fares. Many passengers have, however, expressed dismay over the sudden hike in price, which was implemented without any official approval or prior communication from the Ghana Private Roads Union. And there is more in this report by Rejoice Peso.
January 2024, the unions proposed a 20% increment in response to hikes in taxes, fuel, and cost of other inputs. But that did not materialize until a recent jump in fuel prices forced them to return to the table. But the second approach has also been met with delays after Wednesday's meeting with government was postponed to a later date. Amidst these developments, short-distance drivers in Accra have taken matters into their own hands by independently raising fares by varying percentages. On the other hand, long-distance drivers are holding off on making any changes awaiting official communication and direction from the union leaders. Passengers have expressed dissatisfaction with the sudden fare increases, noting that they were unaware of any official change to transport fares.
We are not aware of it, and they haven't announced it to us. Even right now, we are just fighting in the bus that the lot of fare is too much. Because why is it that if you want to increase the fare, you have to announce it so that we are aware, so that all of us will have to adjust ourselves. But you can't just wake up and say the lot of fare in 19 cities. You know, it seems like the nation is, the way the nation is sending it is like there's no leader. Everybody is just doing whatever he wants.
I woke up this morning, joined the car from Ashama to Kaneshin. They say 19 cities. I was surprised. I asked, when did they increase the fee? They say that's the fee. So I just pay. I don't have any knowledge that. Nobody told me that the fee will be increased. But it's just this money that is increased. So
if you come to me, I'm going to tell you. If you say you're going to come to me, but I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you. But sir, told the weebi, before end your mind to and some cyber fools, so must I to you know, Nami are ready, but Nami Nims and Nana said, or China, every basso, sir.
The drivers have cited various reasons for increasing the fares.
Fair lady, I will say to sir, first of all, and I'll come back to petrol, so I'll come on now, so say, and I say to petrol, but this is the answer.
They don't inform us when increasing the fuel prices, so we won't wait for their meeting before increasing transport fares. I wish the increment percentage will go up again, because we can't buy spare parts, yet passengers will be fighting us.
Next week, meeting.
We have to increase because we can't buy spare parts coupled with the fuel. We are crying, likewise the passengers.
But here is the case, one trying GPRT, Obi Ayen ya ope. Bro, we chrom no.
The fool ano ya tu ma omni GPRT, during one san ya tu. Any GPRT, during one san ya tu.
So because Abaino I'm doing the GPRT and san o tu mu no. Obi Ayen ya ope. Ano na ope aka.
Abaino sorry no tu mu direct there. Ano ya ni no more GPRT.
Well, the argument rages on, and government has rejected the transport operator's proposal to increase transport fares by 20% this week. Well, there's more in the following report on details of this crunch meeting with the Minister of Transport.
Government in this meeting argued that more data is needed to justify the margin of increase in transport fares that the various unions were pushing. This is because government maintained that current development and the various model does not warrant the margin of increase being proposed. They therefore reached an agreement for a new date should be set to try and finalize negotiation on increase in transport fares. There is currently gentleman's agreement that any time price of petroleum products go go up by more than 10% in a quarter, that should trigger negotiations between government and the transport operators for an increase. Joy Business is also learning that another reason why no deal was reached is that some of the unions at the meeting did not have the national chairman around. Therefore, government was worried that any agreement reached may end not bidding on all of them. The Transport Ministry has now set April 17, 2024, that is next Wednesday, as a new date for talks to resume on possible increased transport fares. But for some, with the inflation rate that has started going up, with the March rate hitting 25.8%, some are worried about the impact of fares going up on the economy and the cost of living going forward.
Let's shift our attention now to other health-related stories. Now, non-communicable diseases such as diabetes and hypertension continue to ravage the world, especially in African countries, including Ghana. It is killing the country's younger population at an alarming rate, and this has been blamed largely on unhealthy diets and physical inactivity among Ghanaians, and the biggest one is ignorance. Well, but have you considered the possibility of utilizing technology to combat NCDs? Well, a Ghanaian tech company, MyHealthCorp, has introduced a digital system to help deal with non-communicable diseases among Ghanaians. So how will that benefit you and me? In the studio now with me is Kwesi Tabri, and he's founder and CEO of MyHealthCorp. And Kwesi, you're not here alone. Introduce yourself for me.
My name is Kevin Brown.
Okay.
I'm in Mr. Kwesi's team.
Okay.
I'm the lead for the foundation that is MyHealthCorp Foundation.
Interesting.
Which deals with giving back the little we have gotten from MyHealthCorp back to those who may not be able to have access to our services ordinarily.
I'll come to you, but I'll start with Kwesi. Big projects now, MyHealthCorp. What is it all about?
Thank you very much for inviting us for this very important discussion. Mm-hmm. Basically, before creating any product, you need to understand what is the problem.
Mm.
And when I came back to Ghana, you can see that I have a very deep French accent.
Yes, very cute.
And at least it's done.
Yeah.
I lived in France for many years. Mm-hmm. And I came back in 2016
to
understand the sports market. And over this time, I realized that there were a big issue in Ghana, which is around the non-communicable diseases, basically. But when you say non-communicable disease, people do not understand what it is, basically. Basically, it's a disease you can get without no contamination.
Mm.
It's not like COVID, where somebody can contaminate another person.
I see.
This one, you can get it just because of your lifestyle.
Interesting.
I will give you a very simple example. We are now sitting.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, but we are falling sick indirectly.
By sitting?
By sitting. Because you are inactive.
Oh, I see.
And the issue in Ghana is, most of the time, we don't eat well, we don't exercise, and naturally, 50% of our population are obese.
Well, that's factual.
So this is basically a fact.
Mm-hmm.
By 2034, 42% of Ghanaians will die because of the non-communicable diseases.
Say that again. Wait, we're going to die because we're sitting now?
We are going to die because to get diabetes, it's your lifestyle which guides you.
Yeah.
The way you eat, how active you are,
okay,
how you pay attention also on your well-being, and this is what basically causes this disease.
Oh, I see.
And I'll give you a basic example we did in many of our schools, and we realized that our kids cannot jump 10 times just in front of them because they are not active. Why all this? It's also because of education, because most of the time you think that staying cool at home is very good.
Mm.
We eat anytime, you see. So by understanding it, we ask ourselves, how can we help people not to fall sick?
So, that's where your app comes in.
Exactly. Our focus is a preventive health measurement.
Okay.
Eating well is medicine, because it's inside your food that you have all your medicine. So it's important to eat well. Exercising is also medicine, because each time you exercise, you build a system which is very strong, so you don't fall sick, basically. You see, so for us, it's very important. And now, if we move a little bit forward. When you fall sick and you go in the hospital, most of the time we cannot pay our medical bills.
Yes.
So we know indirectly you are about to die. So we want to make sure that every Ghanaian understands that paying attention on themselves way before is much better than being sick, curative healthcare.
But eating well, exercising, are all very expensive. With the current economic situation, it's very difficult for me to decide to eat grapes when you can use 4CD to get kinky. Don't you think? So what's the cheapest way out of this?
It's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
Because eating kinky is good. The issue we have is the proportion we eat.
Okay.
We eat a lot, then we become naturally bigger.
Okay.
Then we are not active. So because of this situation, we have decided first to create a digital health tech platform, which goal is to understand this issue, and then to bring the preventive health people. You say, who are they? A dietitian, a personal trainer. All these people are in the market. But if you take a dietitian and our kids, when they finish school, they are not working.
Mm.
So it means we have the force which exists. But they are not in front of the population because we don't know where to find them. If I ask you, you want to find a dietitian, where do you go? You don't know, basically, like everybody.
Oh, you go to the hospital, then they recommend one for you.
You go to the hospital and they recommend one for you.
Yes.
Basically. But we believe that by bringing all these preventive health professionals in one digital platform, because every Ghanaian now is very connected, can easily book that professional, basically, directly in your house, if you want, at the hospital, if you want, in your office, if you want.
Mm.
So basically, we are creating an idea to make people understand, like Uber, with two sides. I am a dietitian. Most of the time, I need 4 years to find a job. I finish school.
Mm.
Basically, I just need to download on Play Store or Google the app. I register my business directly, few clicks. And in the other side, I am a client. I need this service because 50% are obese. I download my app and I can book any professional to come and guide me at a very affordable price.
That's what I was expecting to hear, because cost comes in very handy. So on the app, you have a lot of health professionals and you can log into the app as an individual. So walk me through the process.
Okay. So we have two apps, like my CEO said.
Yeah.
There's My Health Corp Pro.
Okay.
And there's My Health Corp. You can find any of these on App Store or Play Store. So if you're a professional, say you're a nutritionist, a physiotherapist, a psychologist, a personal trainer, and you want to give your services out to clients, you download My Health Corp Pro. And then you do what we call an onboarding process, where you input certain details like your name, your certification, proof in a video form that you know your stuff and you know what you are doing. Then we as an organization will verify you. And then you create what we call a consultation. And then you can appear in the customer app, which is My Health Corp.
Mm.
So as a client, when I download My Health Corp, I would see all these professionals that have been onboarded in My Health Corp Pro. And then I can scroll through several of these people. So if I need to book a nutritionist, I go to the section that says nutrition professionals, and then I book a nutritionist. If I need to book, say, a physiotherapist, I go into the wellness professionals. I look for physiotherapist. I can search, I can filter, and then I find these people.
Mm.
We also have wellness events. So, for example, we have one big one coming up, which is Global Wellness Day, but we filter, and then I find these people.
Mm.
We also have wellness events. So, for example, we have one big one coming up, which is Global Wellness Day, but section, and then you can find several wellness events. So, if it's Global Wellness Day and you want to attend, you can book in app. If I'm a coach and I'm holding swimming lessons as an event every Saturday, I want to teach My Health Corp Pro, My Health Corp.
Interesting initiative. Before we let you go, finally, what should we expect from you moving forward? We know you have a lot of activities lined up, especially because of sensitization is key for some of us in the working space. We spend most of our time sitting down, not moving. That is about to change, though, for me. So what projects do you have lined up?
So basically, he was talking about Global Wellness Day, and I will chip in a little bit, because most of the time, we talk about cost. So basically what he was trying to explain is, if you book a private consultation, of course, it's a little bit more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But all our collective activity in group, which are many on the app, you can have it at a very, very affordable price because it's the numbers which also decrease the cost. So this is how the model works.
Okay.
Now, this product can be seen, which I can understand that, you need some income to afford to it.
Yeah.
That's why during the year, we have a lot of activity for free for people. How does it work? When you book us, mm-hmm. part of the income you pay goes directly on our foundation.
Okay.
Which goal is to make sure that every Ghanaian can also have access to health and wellness for free.
That's good. That's
basically
good.
So we go on community where we know that they cannot afford with our professionals. Mm-hmm. It is my Health Corp Foundation which pays this amount for them. And they can come massively to be also active. So we are trying to bridge the gap to at least try
mm-hmm.
to make sure that health is accessible to everybody.
Great initiative. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for coming to the studio. I'm sure we'll have to make time to delve into this further. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. But then, key takeaways. You have to ensure you're living a more active life. Exercise, and if you need help, you know that My Health Corp app is there for you. Let's do some other stories now. The Abuachiri Festival is a famous deer hunting festival celebrated by people of Winneba. We'll tell you all about that festival after this quick break.
Into the lives of extraordinary individuals who have achieved unparalleled success in their fields. From groundbreaking academics to legal luminaries and visionary leaders and entrepreneurs, the legends who have seen it all and shaped the very fabric of our society.
We are living on borrowed values, borrowed whatever. Our ancestors said, borrowed water never quenches thirst.
Hear their stories, learn from their experiences, and get inspired by their wisdom as they share insights that are both enlightening and transformative.
I'm told that these days, the election is all about who gives you most money.
What do you think about that?
Well, it wasn't like that in the early days. It was not like that. But then I suppose it's because of hard times.
I would like to see more honesty, not only in our rulers, but also among us, the ruled.
On the message I'm giving your generation is that don't be fooled that you own Africa. It's something that the youth of Africa have to, you know, to focus on. And they have to be prepared to die defending the motherland.
The Sages is a journey into the minds of those who have truly made a difference, a unique opportunity to stand on the shoulders of giants. The Sages, coming soon on Joy News and on all our social media platforms.
Let's talk about the Abuachiri Festival, the famous deer hunting festival celebrated by the people of Winneba in the first week of May every year, and it is almost here. Well, this festival is well known for its unique touch of tradition and culture blended with loads of entertainment for indigents and all patrons of the festival. Well, the exhibition of bravery and strength shown through the expedition by two Asafo groups to hunt a live deer from the sacred forest to sacrifice to specify the gods and make a successful celebration is what makes this festival stands out from all other festivities. Well, this year's festival is scheduled to take place from the 27th of April to the 5th of May 2024, and with me to discuss all the planning that's been going Behind the scene is Kofi Anobil of Nice Media. Now, you're in charge of communications for this year's festival. Tell me, what do you have lined up?
All right, so you know Abuachu is a very popular festival.
Yes, it is.
In school in Ghana, once in your class, you get to learn about Abuachu. Yes. In Arabic or social studies or something. So people have heard about Abuachu a lot of the time. But the truth is that the real experience of Abuachu is not really what we even hear in class. There is the unseen, unheard, and unknown part of Abuachu that you only get that experience when you join the celebration. And so that is what makes it a lot more different. And you know, it's not really normal to see traditions passed on from generations and being sustained as it is in the past. And we do it in Winneba, in Abuachu. It has always been the same Asafo groups, the Dentefo Asafo number 2, Tuafo Asafo number 1, being sent to go to a sacred forest to go look for a live deer and bring it. And it has always been that. And this year promises not to be anything short of the experience that patrons have actually had. So it is the same Abuachu Festival, the one that you know. But the only promise we're giving you is that there are a lot you have not heard before, there are a lot you have not seen before, there are a lot you know about Abuachu. And you only get to know it when you experience the celebration in Winneba coming May 2024.
Interesting. I'd love to be there myself to have a feel of it. But then we're pushing the Ghana Beyond Aid agenda. Yeah. We're also pushing the Ghana Return Home agenda. Yes? And so we're looking at how do we get the foreign Ghanaians to come and contribute to this festivities.
Right. So I think something like it actually started last year. Where a group of Ghanaians in the diaspora, Africans in the diaspora, actually came around.
Yeah, so beyond the return.
They came beyond the return. So they came for the Abuachu Festival because it's quite popular. They've heard it even while they're in the diaspora. So when they came to the traditional council, they had guides for them. They had access to all of the beautiful places in Winneba. They had access to all of our traditional places. And they were told all the beautiful stories and a lot of the stories that you never hear before, even never in Winneba. So there are actually arrangements like that. All persons in the diaspora, they bring themselves together. They come together when it's Abuachu time. They come to Winneba. Mm. And then the arrangement to take them through the backroom stuff and the things that goes on. You don't even see them in the media. You only get to see them when you are around in Abuachu. So, of course, it's the promotion of it. We are asking. It's beyond the return. We are doing all of this to promote tourism. Abuachu is known for its time-testing activities and things that goes on to make the festival a one-top-notch festival. So we are saying that we've not really truncated the genuity of it. We have the originality of Abuachu. It is still in tune. The only thing we need you to do is that come around. What you've seen, what you've heard, we want you to come and experience it. So when you are sharing the story of Abuachu, you'll be able to share it much more better. Of course, this year, we are looking at two things. Okay. We are looking at using Abuachu as a festival to achieve development, of course, very important, and also to sustain our tradition as it has always been. So that is the theme for this year, using Abuachu to sustain our tradition and also to bring development. The list of activities have added a lot of inclusions to make patrons enjoy while focusing on the traditions and all of that. So it's not only going to be traditional. Mm. We have our traditions, our customs, our rituals, they go on. But we also have the entertainment bit of it that we're going to include to make it a lovely experience. So we are starting on the 27th, as you mentioned earlier, and then it's going through to all about the 5th on Sunday, where everything is going to end. We're starting with a pre-Abuachu health walk, and that was a refugee health walk on Saturday 27th.
I'm going to be there.
You need to. I'm actually inviting you to be there.
With my whole team.
Yeah, I know, right? So we're starting on that 27th on Saturday. Sunday together with traditional council and then the GPCC, we are organizing a Christian service. So there will be a service in the evening, gospel rock show, and we'll use that as a means for fundraising. On the Monday, we are doing cleanup exercise, of course, because we are hosting the whole country and the whole world. We'll have to make sure that our streets and our corners are clean. So on Monday, we'll do our cleanup exercise. On Tuesday, we'll do our regatta. We normally do a lot of competitions. You know, one thing that makes Abuachu unique is that original rivalry and the healthy competition between the Asafo groups. So they will start with the competitions, do the regatta, tug of war. They'll go for competitions on the sea with their canoes.
That would be very interesting.
Of course.
And in fact, we would give you all those details. In fact, the dates and timelines would be on myjoyonline.com. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, Kofi. We have to make way for Popsa HSCKANKU to bring you America Decides. You stay tuned in. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is America Decides. My name is Echi Sikanku, and we are here to bring you up to speed on things that are going on the international front, but more specifically with the United States. We'll be diving deep into pressing concerns of American voters. We've talked a little bit about the personalities, but we'll not be talking about the issues that are dominating the conversation from the voters' perspectives. Immigration is big, and it will interest you to know that immigration has taken over the economy as far as the major pressing issues of concern are discussed. Governance is also big, and then also the economy. These stand out as the three key priority areas for American voters heading into the polls. So we'll unpack those issues, what voters or what the citizens are thinking about that. But before we get into that, let us recap what has been happening over the past week. So one of the major things that have been happening is that former President Donald Trump has amped his rhetoric, and he has been increasing calls for Joe Biden to join him on the debate stage. He's saying that if Joe Biden is not afraid, he should join him on the debate stage so that they can go one-on-one and have a debate. So Donald Trump, at a Florida fundraiser, renewed his challenge, you know, to the incumbent president, asking him to come and meet him for a one-on-one debate. But here's the interesting thing. You recall that Donald Trump himself did not participate in any debate at all during the primary seasons. Although the other candidates repeatedly called for him to come on stage and engage with them, but he never did any of it. Now he's asking President Biden to join him for the debate, for a debate. Mr. Biden has registered that, well, he's open to it. He does not have a problem engaging him in a debate, but he has a condition. His condition is that he needs to see a behavioral change in Donald Trump. And we don't know what this exactly means, but I'm sure President Biden is not impressed with Trump's antics, maybe his rhetoric, and his behavior on a political campaign trail. However, the fact of the matter is that it's still early days. So there's still more time, enough room for us to see whether this particular debate will come on or not. They are yet to have their presidential nomination events, so we are still waiting to see if this will happen. So that's one of the major things happening. Next. So there's a criminal trial that is about to happen next week, and it's very historical. Donald Trump is set to begin his criminal trial in New York, where he's accused of paying an adult film star in exchange for her silence during the 2016 presidential race. This was deemed to go against the campaign rules, and he's been arraigned in court in New York. The Manhattan District Attorney, in court documents, alleged that Mr. Trump paid the adult film star $130,000 US dollars, and in addition to that, also falsified business records in order to cover up this transaction. As you'd imagine, Donald Trump has denied wrongdoing. He says he didn't do it, and that all that he did was to make those payments to stop false accusations against him. Let us take note that this will be the first time in the U.S. history that a former president appears in court to face a criminal trial. So this is different from the civil trials that have been ongoing. It's a pure criminal trial, and it's never, ever, ever happened before that a former president finds himself in this particular position. Of course, for democratic conversations, it's quite significant for global democratic developments. For most countries, this is a rarity, but it goes to show that indeed no one is above the law. It speaks to the principle of equality before the law, and that it is possible for a former president to be held accountable long after he's left the scene. Very interesting development there. One of the major things that we need to take note of, apart from this criminal trial, is in terms of the polls, right? So every week, there are some polls that come up which really give us an idea of where the candidates are in terms of the race. A recent poll released by the Wall Street Journal shows Joe Biden trailing Mr. Trump in 6 out of 7 battleground states. You know, give and take, these are the battleground states that usually determine the outcome of the election. And Donald Trump is leading in 6 out of those. It's a very significant development. Biden won 6 of these 7 states that now favor Trump in the polls. So that's really a major development. This comes amidst concerns among the American public about Biden's handling of immigration, government spending, and inflation. So immigration, again here, major issue. I've seen the evidence here, the border issue, people coming in, infiltrating the U.S., a very, very big issue. According to a Gallup poll, Americans regard immigration as the most topical issue of this campaign season. Record numbers of immigrants continue to troop into the United States from its southern border, an issue that has become a point of contention for both Republicans and Democrats. So that's one thing that we should obviously be watching. And lastly, among the list of topical issues that we are looking at, President Biden earlier this week announced plans to forgive student loans up to 20 million debts. So student loans are a big issue because college education is extremely important, running into tens and thousands of dollars. Many have to seek loans to pay this, and sometimes it really becomes burdensome. Even when they graduate, it takes so many years to get this off their chest. The president has revealed his ambitious loan forgiveness plan, and he did this during a visit to Wisconsin, which is a battleground state that he narrowly carried in 2020. The Supreme Court struck down this policy when it was unveiled last year, compelling the Biden administration to explore other ways of implementing the program. Republicans, of course, have accused Biden of trying to buy the votes in an election year. So Biden really trying to do the most to forgive those loans owned by many students and probably attract the youth vote. But let's now look at some perspectives on the nation's most pressing problems. Okay, we'll go there and then try to look at some of the most pressing issues. So when you look here, these are national views, okay, on the top problems in the nation. And so the question is, what do you think is the most important problem facing this country today? And it's unprompted because this is an open-ended question, and like those that they give you several options for you to choose from. So top of it is immigration. That's 20%. It rose to 28 and still at 28%. The next issue is poor leadership, and so this speaks to the presidency itself. The economy in general comes after that. But more specifically, if you come down, we have the high cost of living or inflation, which has come up here. Then there's poverty, hunger, and homelessness. A lot of people declaring themselves homeless, you know, and not finding places to stay at. So this is a major issue. And so if you thought that there are people in America who are not facing hunger issues, this seeks to prove that point. Now, unifying the country. Of course, a lot of divisions across different lines. I mean, partisan divisions, racial divisions, gender divisions, and all of that, ideological divisions, religious divisions. So it's become very imperative for the country to remain united, and that's something most people are concerned about. There are crime and violence. I'm sure we'll all be hearing about a lot of the shootings that have been going on. It never ceases to diminish. And so it is always a major issue. Electoral reform and democracy. President Biden, for instance, has said that this election is about the future of democracy. So that's another major issue. And of course, you'd see the rest of them following up. Race relations, abortion. Abortion really coming up. Always a big issue in US elections. The right to abortion. And of course, foreign policy. Another major issue. Healthcare, education, and environmental issues. Climate change is really, really down there. But anyway, this gives us an idea of what the major issues are in the upcoming election. So this brings us up to speed in our weekly roundup of what is going on that front. Thanks for watching. My name is Eche Sikanku. Have a good afternoon.
Imagine a family without